Support for Almost Entirely Sports is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology developments to provide you the best tools for your grooming experience. And Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. Here's what we can do for you. We have an exclusive offer for listeners to Almost Entirely Sports. It's 20% off plus free shipping with the code ALMOST on any order at manscaped.com. That's an incredible deal for an incredible product. Listen, over the course of our future, maybe we'll get into more or less detail whenever talking about our experience with Manscaped, but I can tell you firsthand, they hooked us up. They sent out a box for me and Beards and Rudy, and apparently Beards this whole time was a Manscaped user and never told us, which has just really brought on more questions than answers at this point. But I have now used the Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0, and everything in their Perfect Package 3.0 is absolutely unbelievable. Everything the ads say have been 100% true. It truly is a best-in-class grooming experience. Plus, if you do go get their Perfect Package, they'll also give you a pair of high-performance Manscaped boxer briefs that are incredible and will keep everything feeling fresh all day long, and a travel shed bag to put all your grooming goodies inside of. Also, the bag is incredible. I promise you, this is something that all of us were so excited to get and have been so impressed by whenever we did the unboxing on the show, whenever it got here to the station. Everybody at Manscaped has been great. The product is impeccable, and I'm really, really excited about being able to bring you a deal for 20% off and free shipping with the code ALMOST at manscaped.com. You can support the show and get a great product from Manscaped, really supporting yourself, if you know what I mean. There's a lot of double entendres throughout this read. I don't know if you caught that or not. You can get 20% off and free shipping with the code ALMOST at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code ALMOST. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Back in the day, it was so easy to murder somebody. They didn't have cameras all over the place.
Absolutely.
Nobody had phones. Nobody's tracking anybody. Like, if you got caught murdering somebody, you were just a sucky murderer.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
It's the return of Mick Schaefer, 41 Action News. He didn't go anywhere. We just didn't have shows this last couple of Fridays. It's good to see your face again, Mick.
It's good to be here. It's great to be here. It's awesome, terrific, wonderful to be here.
How has your last couple of weeks treated you? I think maybe it's been three, because you were out of town at one point. We missed some shows. We had the NFL draft.
What was it? It was last week was the NFL draft.
Yes.
The week before that...
Were you in Chicago that week?
That was like a week before that.
Yeah, we had some reason we didn't have a show last Friday.
Sporting game.
Soccer. Ted Lasso manage.
Yes.
I have seen all of Ted Lasso since the last time we spoke.
And aren't you glad
it's
that you
so,
have?
It's yes, so effing good, dude. It's yes. So it's perfect. It's everything that you
I
asked
met.
Me.
So I've known one person. It's my brother-in-law too, who didn't like it. And now I question my relationship with him and why I should have it going forward.
Yeah,
really.
Like what?
I'm just really upset by that.
What is he good? Because that is worse than having not watched it. Like Rudy still hasn't watched
it. I have not.
Even though he now has it all, he has the files on his computer.
I just moved. I'm getting everything set up still. I'll have it done.
Did you have to borrow an Apple TV account?
No, he had somebody in Rudy's life had a USB drive at work at some point someday.
Yeah. Season one DVD got released. Yeah. It's collector's edition.
Yeah. He's got it on Blu-ray. I put it on the flash drive for him.
It came with my PlayStation 5.
Yeah, it was a bonus.
Yeah,
you know, it's one of those things. You know, just don't ask too many questions. Just take the files. I'm not going to give his computer a virus, and everybody's happy. But yeah, it's perfect. It's an incredible show.
And I can't wait. July, I think, is when season two
comes
out.
Yeah, it's summer. Soon. You gotta get there by then, Rudy. You can't be still catching up.
By the time season two starts, like before season two, episode one comes out, I will have seen episode one of Ted Lasso.
How have you done, watched, experienced anything over these last several weeks that you
you want to bring to the people? Your recommendations so far have been watch Ted Lasso and get vaccinated. I've done both of those things, and they've been great.
My deal, the last week or so, I've been I did Peaky Blinders the first couple seasons.
Oh, yeah.
Now I'm catching back up, finishing that off. So that's what I've been doing lately. Yeah, that's good. You know what? Here's one. It's like a Game of Thronesy type show. It's called The Last Kingdom, but it's like based on real people and true events. It's like King Arthur, basically. So I don't know what that is.
Game of Thrones isn't real.
I know, right?
It's on the History Channel.
What is
The Last Kingdom?
Well, I watched it on Netflix. They have it on
History Channel. Shows though are low key. Like, have you ever seen Vikings? That's also a History Channel show.
This is about the Vikings.
The
basically.
History Channel shows are really good.
This is basically the Vikings invading England, right? And England doing the best it can to save their kingdom. And so it's based on a lot of true events. And King Arthur and all these people really lived in, I don't know, 1100? I don't know, the Middle Ages back then. So watch that. It's a lot like Game of Thrones. They're doing the two Fs. One is fighting.
And one is family.
Yes. Family, or they're making a family, or they're fighting.
Frolicking.
In a Game of Thrones case, sometimes they're making a family with family.
Yes.
It's All in the Family.
That's true.
Which is what I've been watching lately, is I've been watching a lot of All in the Family.
Seriously?
No.
Oh.
I've heard Peaky Blinders is very good. I just never made the leap.
You might want to have the subtitles on too. It's just
everybody's
hardcore.
Talking all this up, but he what's the name of this? Everyone's
no,
spags.
No. It's British.
I know.
Okay, that was your British accent.
Yeah. I nailed it, bro.
Every accent leads to spags or
all
Bill
roads
Clinton.
Lead. All roads lead
Tony
back to spags
Danza or something
yep.
like that.
All roads lead back to spags.
Spags, Bill Clinton, occasionally Pennywise the Clown.
That's exactly right. Those are my only impressions. That's true. Do you have a British accent?
No, I don't do accents at all. There's like one or two impressions I think I do well, but I can't even remember them right now. So I don't walk that plank. I'm not like a Curtis or a Jason Anderson. They're both really good at impressions. I am not.
Curtis has an instrument, man.
Yeah.
True words, man.
We've had him do some voice work on this show, and in fact, there's something new that I'm having him. It's actually something I'm having him redo for a new version. And I was reminded, because we had him do another voice thing a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, oh, yeah, just do like your radio voice or whatever, because I had a voice in my head of his that he was doing, and he did the radio voice, like, oh, no, that's not it. You do sound like the ESPN TV big voice guy, but what I was looking for was his John Facenda voice,
yeah.
The autumn wind is a raider, that whole thing,
yeah,
and it's like beat for beat perfect. It's unbelievable, and that's one of like 5,000 voices that live inside of him. Which has to get uncomfortable at some point. It's a lot of voices.
But he's good.
He's incredible. You sure you don't want to try to break off a little impression of some sort?
I try to think what I
is there
can
one? Because here's you know the
you got a Bill Self. Maybe like think of other coaches in the area, people you've heard talk a lot. I think that's the thing with Spags. Like we hear Spags talk so much and that it just the impression just kind of naturally forms.
Yeah.
The Frank Caliendo rule at one point, I think he said, was that you're like, you do an impression of someone doing an impression of that person.
Yes.
Which is why Bill Clinton is pretty easy to get into. Because you're just doing four, you're like 4 degrees away.
Yes.
I don't even know what he actually sounds like.
Yes.
I just know that it all kind of ends up down here eventually. And then all of a sudden you forget what time it is, and all of a sudden now you're Spags. Like, those are the only impressions.
You know who here has a great impression that I love, I laugh at every time? And it might be the only thing he makes me laugh at. Bukati doing Bill Cosby. Have you heard that?
No.
Oh,
my God.
No.
He did a show for 6 weeks, and I didn't hear that.
Oh, like oh, once boy. Every couple months, it'll be on the cuts, because
wow.
I'm usually not up early enough to listen to the morning show.
Understandable.
And it's so funny. And those guys, they're like, they're egging him on, but they're basically saying, oh, no, don't do it, Nate, don't do it, Nate, because you know what Bill Cosby's... been accused of doing.
Just letting
too funny?
Letting the show go on for too long?
Nate knocks that one out of the park.
I don't think I knew that was that lived within Nate. That's very exciting.
I definitely didn't know.
We should just call him right now. We should just call Nate and say, hey, could you just break off a piece of Bill Cosby for us really quick?
Do the pudding pop thing.
Pudding pops. Yeah, come on, Nate.
That's what he does.
That's
what he does.
Yeah,
you
I feel
your
like,
pudding pops in again.
I feel like if you do a Bill Cosby impression that doesn't include the words pudding pop,
it's
not a Bill Cosby impression.
That's 4 degrees away. That's you're doing an impression of somebody that does an impression of him.
You've got to have a starting point. And that's it for the Bill Cosby one. For Spags, it's being generally confused by, you know, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good night. What time is it? You know, we had a great practice out there today. Honey Badger, we had C-Dub. Like, it's you've got to find something to start with. And then also just admit that you're not good at them. And then do it anyway, which is what I go with most of the time. I feel like I found another impression somewhere within me.
Yeah, there was not a long ago. One. I don't remember who it was right now. We did find a fourth one, though.
Yeah.
You know, when Jason does Edo, Ed Orgeron.
Ooh.
And then we'll play an Edo, but I can't tell who's who.
Yeah.
Do you have an impression, Rudy? I feel like
I've done the Spags.
You've done Bullwinkle Rocky and Bullwinkle. You're familiar with Rocky and Bullwinkle,
absolutely,
right?
That's my really generation, baby.
It's not really an impression. So, as much as Sterling just thinks that's how I just sound.
Mick, just close your eyes right now. Now, Rudy, just say something about Kentucky football.
Well, we like to run the ball a lot.
it's just boom. It's just right there. Yep. So I've got to get a Rocky impression figured out, and then this show gets very different.
And then we're good. But yeah, so going off that, if you've spent any time in a Southern state or an SEC state school, you've got an Edo impression. Mm-hmm. You've done it.
You just kind of growl.
Yeah. He's so endearing. If you spend enough time around the SEC. You're just gonna.
I was watching Young Rock. You know that show the other night.
Yes. Oh my God, is that watchable?
Not
okay.
No.
That's fine.
I mean, no.
You continue down your path, and then we're gonna circle.
It was
back.
On TV. Okay. And I don't seek it out. It was on TV. It was maybe the second episode I'd seen of it, and so it's pretty self-serving. I'm just basically his whole life, and so it's interesting at times because he grew up in a wrestling family, but it shows when he got recruited by all these schools, and it had two coaches from Miami, which is where he played, talking, and it had one guy that sounded a lot like Ed O.
Yes.
And sure enough, it was Ed Orgeron who recruited him at Miami.
Yes.
And they had a younger Ed O basically playing him, and he had the gravelly voice just like that. And so I thought that was very studious of them to find out who actually recruited him and to realize, oh, it's Ed O, and to get an actor to do the Ed Orgeron voice.
I remember seeing that on Twitter as it happened, yeah.
That man is one of the more, like, fascinating college football figures in the sense that, like, he's just been everywhere, and, like, he's also in The Blind Side.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that guy is just – that guy
the
is
actor?
Just, like – well, no, Ed Orgeron.
Ed Orgeron?
Yeah,
Ed
Orgeron. They had
the scene of the coaches
it's
recruiting.
It's been a really long time
Michael
since
Orr,
they
have like the real coaches, and he was at Ole Miss. Was he at Ole Miss?
Well, he was there. Who's I don't know if he was there at the time of Michael Orr.
I don't remember.
High school.
Yeah, I don't remember which SEC school he was at, but he was, you know, they had him, you know, doing the pitch. I think it was the first time I ever heard Ed O talk. I was like, whoa, this guy.
That's what I'm guessing. Is Ed Orgeron
Nick Saban
and Ole Miss.
In it.
Yeah,
Phil
I see Nick Saban
Fulmer
here.
Was in it, and which is wild also when you watch that movie because back in that time, Phil Fulmer was Nick Saban, where it was just like that was the king of the SEC.
Yep.
And then now it's just like, you know, it just turned so fast.
There's a tweet
just
here from Darren.
Once Nick Saban took over at Alabama basically. Yep. Yeah.
There's a tweet here from Darren Ravel that said Nick Saban refused to wear LSU clothes in The Blind Side because he was Bama's coach. Because at the time, like he was Bama's coach. Although Ed Orgeron is here wearing Ole Miss colors and looks like a little Ole Miss like lapel pin, I had absolutely no memory of him being in that movie.
I take pride in the fact that Oklahoma State, their last game against Alabama, OSU won it. It was the last game before Nick Saban took over. It was like the Independence Bowl of 2007 or something
that
like
still
that.
Still counts.
I take pride in the last time that Kentucky played Alabama. We were only down 3-0 at the end of the first quarter.
That's true.
Game finished 63-3, but hey, 3-0 after one, baby.
That counts. I think that
that's basically a victory.
Let's see who was. It was the last game before Nick Saban.
There was
is that what you is that what you're saying? Nick?
It was the last game before Nick Saban. 07
so,
Independence Bowl, I think.
So I'm guessing it would have been at the end of the 06 season.
Yeah.
But the coach that regular season for Bama was Mike Shula.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like he coached the game.
He didn't.
No.
Do you know who coached that game against Oklahoma State?
Yes, because I looked it up.
Okay.
And I can't remember, and I'm really mad right now. Hold on.
It's gotta be somebody big name wise, just based off Josh's.
Oh, and this is more of a Mick trivia thing.
Oh, okay, okay.
This is because I went back look and just see because
I knew
who it was.
I knew Mike Shula got fired, and because obviously Nick Saban.
I'm not gonna remember
the coach,
it.
But I don't remember who coached.
Who is it?
It's Joe Kines.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, I thought it was
Joe Kines. Is he's got the worst record in Alabama history, worst winning percentage in Alabama history.
0.
He's 0-1. He was the interim head coach between Shula before they hired Nick Saban.
Where's he at?
So Joe Kines just says former American football player and coach. He was the defensive coordinator at Texas A&M from 2008 to 2009. He's now 76, so I'm guessing he's just kicking his feet up at this point.
You never know.
We end up in some weird places around here. Like yesterday we were talking about Albert Pujols getting DFA'd, and it ended up just in us talking about crazy Barry Bonds stats. Where like he has every ridiculous statistical thing you could ever ask for, but we found out that Albert Pujols leads all of baseball history in one major statistical category. Do you know what it is?
It's a major statistical.
It's not. Yeah, it's not. Category. It's not OPS plus or something.
Right. And okay,
it's on his baseball reference, you know, and that all of that does include OPS plus, so that example. But it is a prominent.
It's not.
Stat.
It's not like an advanced analytical stat,
right?
Though.
Is it RBIs?
Nope.
I think he's second in RBIs.
And then I'll give you my favorite Barry Bonds stat.
Man, what would it be? Hit by pitch? I don't know. What is it?
That was my guess.
It is ground into double plays.
Oh, really?
He's got the most double plays. I think somebody on Twitch yesterday said that second place was Cal Ripken Jr.
Yes, yeah.
Which is funny, just because you have to be such a proficient player.
You have to play forever.
To hit the ball on the ground,
and
absolutely.
He hits it hard.
Yeah, you have to, because that's the thing.
And B's not a real try-hard guy down the line.
You got to make good contact with the ball.
That's a great point.
And you have to be somebody who's comfortable enough with not busting it on every single ball that's hit right to the shortstop.
You're screwed if you hit it hard right at somebody, because that's going to turn two.
Here's my favorite Barry Bonds stat. I'm going to give you the Mount Rushmore of intentional walks in baseball history. Fourth place, Hank Aaron. Heard of him. 293 intentional walks. Third place, Stan Musial. Heard of him. 298 intentional walks. Second place, Albert Pujols. Heard of him. 313 intentional walks. First place, Barry Bonds, 688 intentional walks. He has more than Albert Pujols and Stan Musial, number two and number three,
combined
by a pretty significant amount. Bonkers.
There's so many wild ones.
How many stolen bases does Barry Bonds have, too? Like, the first half of his career, that's what he was doing.
While you're looking for that, so Barry Bonds in his final season at 43, I believe, Josh,
had
a 480 on base percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Albert Pujols never had over 480.
In his entire career. Barry Bonds had that at 43.
43.
You're on base half the
480.
Time.
He was on base half of the time in his last year. Like, outrage. And then he didn't play again.
That's when he's.
That was it.
I'm not going to hang him up. He had 43 homers that year. Is that what you said?
43.
No, he was 43 years old.
Okay.
Yeah. His age 42 season. He had 28 home runs, 132 walks. His batting average was .276, but his OBP was .480. Also, I didn't know this. George Brett, 10th all time in intentional walks.
Good George.
Played a long time. You good? Played for a long time. That's a cool kind of sneaky little stat that can reveal the best players of all time, right?
Yeah.
If you lead Major League Baseball, if you're top 10 in Major League Baseball in intentional walks, you were a badass. They're all Hall of Famers, I'm sure.
Well,
right?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying. So,
except for Barry.
That's true, actually.
Should be a Hall of Famer.
Willie McCovey.
Unless Mark McGuire's in there, too.
Willie McCovey, 5th, Ted Williams, 6th, Vlad Guerrero, 7th, Ken Griffey Jr., Miguel Cabrera, George Brett, Willie Stargell, Eddie Murray, Frank Robinson, Manny Ramirez, Willie Mays, David Ortiz, Tony Gwynn. Yeah. Ortiz is probably going to make it.
Ortiz definitely will because of the persona. Manny Ramirez is the one who's might be like.
I guess.
He should be in, but I could see him just missing.
If
more
we go by
the
greatness and not by the Hall of Fame cutoff, I don't know how far down.
They don't hold grudges.
No, not
never.
At all.
I think the worst player here comes at 20 with Rusty Staub, who was a long time
Blue Jay.
A lot of teams actually, a long time Well, actually, you know what? Let me make... Yeah, okay. So, a long time... now I lost it. Astro, Met, mostly, it went Astros, Expos, Mets, Tigers, Expos again, Rangers for a year, Mets again at the end of his career. He played.
Oh, Blue Jays, yeah, I nailed it.
You nailed it, yeah. I was trying. I was looking really hard for a T-O-R, and it did not show up.
There was a Canadian team in there.
He played for 23 years and was a six-time All-Star. And not a Hall of Famer, just a six-time All-Star and a 23-year player. He got up to 20 because he played for 23
years. Yeah.
But yeah, this is I really like the intention, because even if it's not, Chili Davis also next up, three-time All-Star, three-time World Series champion.
They don't. There's not a whole lot of intentional walks anymore. Even with the whole like hey, just give him four fingers.
You don't see it too much.
Pitchers are going out there. That's the unintentional walk, right? Because they're all the information and research is out there. They know the hot zones. They know the cold zones. All right. Yeah. If I'm going to miss over the plate, it's going to be right here. Okay, we're at a 3-1 count. I'm going to walk him anyway, basically.
Yeah.
Ichiro is 28th all-time with 181. I wouldn't have guessed that, but just a great...
He was just a pure hitter.
I think about it being a power hitters and like usually, clean the bases situations.
And there's always the stories of like he could have hit way more homers. He just chose not to because he wanted to focus on hits. But part of that is because he was so much focused more on getting even just singles, he could essentially hit any pitch thrown. Like he could basically get a hit anytime he wanted to.
Here's my last intentional walk stat, and we can talk about literally anything else. Of all these guys at the top, you've got guys who played for over 20 years, Ted Williams, 19, but literally nobody all the way down until Mike Schmidt at 18 had played for less than 19 years, except for Vladimir Guerrero, who did it in 16 and is seventh all-time with 250. So he might be second behind Barry Bonds in terms of, like, intentional walks per year or something.
Do you remember
which is interesting to me for some reason.
He would swing at like every pitch.
Oh yeah, dude.
Do you
absolutely
remember the ball that like bounced in front of home plate that he hit I think he hit off the wall for a double?
Not until you say that, but now I think I do.
Just remember
he was
a pitch
blast.
Was thrown down in the dirt. It hits the ground. He swings and hits it like off, like it goes in the gap for a double, just like basically a golf swing.
I'll Venmo either of you a dollar if you can tell me the last team that Vlad Guerrero played for. I'm afraid Mick might get it.
I'm assuming it's not the Angels.
I don't remember the last two teams on this list. So it's Montreal for the first nearly
Montreal,
decade.
Los Angeles.
And then it's the Angels for
then
a while.
Then I'm going to guess
Rangers.
He made the I'll let you lock him in.
I think Rangers are a pretty good guess.
He made an All-Star game with the Texas Rangers.
Yes.
And then played a year with the Orioles.
Oh, dang. Okay. I don't remember that.
I was going to say a Northeast team, but not the Orioles. I was kind of thinking maybe he was a Met or a Philly.
I forgot he played with the Rangers for that year, but he also he played 145 games with Baltimore.
Once Mick said it, all of a sudden it was like, oh, yeah, I remember him as a Ranger.
All right, well, my $2 are safe.
Yep, barely.
Barely, though.
Thanks to Baltimore.
Do you find yourself, are you nostalgic for the past of baseball more than other sports, or is it every, do you have like a hierarchy? Because for me, the late 90s, early 2000s baseball is something that I care much more about from 10 years ago than I actually care right now, at least like nationally speaking.
I probably care about the NBA in my youth so much more than I care about it now.
Mm-hmm.
If we're doing it that way.
Yeah.
And look, that's a product of working for 20 years in a market that has the NFL and MLB and for does sure. not have NBA.
Yeah.
So it's just not on my radar nearly as much as those two sports. But yeah, baseball much more than football. I mean, it's the more nostalgic sport. It's the one that holds on to its past better because they hold on to stats.
Yeah.
Right? There's no sport out there that loves its numbers more than baseball. So I think you're onto it right there. It's a nostalgic game.
Also, man,
slow
back in
boring.
The late 90s, early mid 2000s, those home runs. Like when I think of baseball, I just think of Sammy Sosa, Barry Bonds, Mark McGwire.
So we're different generations.
But that's the thing.
Shooting up needles,
right?
Hitting dingers.
But that's the thing, though, is I think we're talking about basically this our same ages, where I think baseball probably that because that's my experience also. Yeah. But I think baseball does that for like just whatever was happening in your youth, because there was great baseball played before that.
Yeah.
We just weren't paying attention to it.
So I would come home to my dad's pharmacy. I'd walk home from school, and I would turn on. We had 12 channels, but channel 6 was WGN, and channel 7 was TBS. So I would watch Cubs games most
Braves
of the time.
And Cubs.
Because the Cubs, at that point, I think in 1988 is when they got their lights. They didn't have lights. Can you imagine that in a major league field that didn't have lights in the late 80s? And so they played all these day games, and I grew up on Ryan Sandberg and the Hawks. And Sean Dunstan and the Penguin and all those guys and then if Dale Murphy and the Braves were playing, I'd go back and forth and watch those games. So that's kind of my nostalgia right there. So a little different time of.
I do though have a similar experience for you. Like my first baseball memories though are like every Sunday just set like watching TBS and watching the Braves games. Like I would like my first like team that I was kind of like into was the Braves because they were just on TV every day and just like watch. And obviously back then it was Chipper Jones and then obviously John Smoltz and that whole pitching, but it was like, but that whole same thing
that
where
team
you,
was fun.
You get like it was at that time where again like the Cubs and then, this is something I think the Cubs and Braves, and I don't know if there's anybody else probably had unique to the rest of baseball where they were just on national television essentially every single day.
Super
because
stations
of their networks.
What a weird concept nowadays.
Yeah,
I guess WGN still is around. But
I mean, obviously TBS, but you know, Braves are on.
Whatever they are.
I think they're
Bally Southeast. I don't know.
there's a Bally Sports, like Atlanta, maybe. Or
yeah,
Southeast,
yes,
or South.
Is still the Yankees.
Yeah.
Is that?
I don't know. Are the Cubs on WGN still?
Probably.
I would assume so. I don't know. Is WGN broadcast?
Like, I think
it's like still a national network. It's not as prominent because there's a million channels out there now.
Yeah.
It's not one of the 12 that they get in Caldwell now. But
that's crazy. I don't think I ever really. I've never really thought about that. So I guess I never knew that WGN was available in Caldwell.
The
just
whole country.
To play. Yeah, that's crazy. I don't think that ever would have.
I mean, Mark
really
Grace is way more famous than he ever should have been.
Yep.
Right.
Because people watched him in the Northeast, in the Southwest, and everywhere in between, not just Chicago. Because
like I do remember watching WGN back in the day when only like 90 Royals games would be televised, which is also a weird concept to think about
now. Right.
But every time they would play the White Sox or the Cubs, you would just turn that was how you watched the Royals that day because they'd be on WGN. And it was just like, it is weird to think about. There was a time when you would just get like 100 Royals games.
Yeah.
You might get like 100, 160.
As opposed to now with Bali where people get zero Royals games.
That's a great point.
You nailed the lights at Wrigley, by the way. August 8th, 1988.
Mm-hmm.
I never doubted you. I just wanted to have a chance
watched
to
like
praise,
the first game.
Praise you. At Wrigley under the lights.
Now like 2A high schools have lights for their baseball fields.
Yeah. There was a tweet that I saw yesterday. I think it was quoting John Boyce of SB Nation, all sorts of other things. It was just something along the lines of baseball games are under no obligation or guarantee to ever end.
They're
and
not.
I've been thinking about that. Like, there's not a guarantee that it will ever end.
That's true.
Eventually, a team is going, even if you take like overtime and whatnot, right? Eventually, a team's going to have more points or you get to a sudden death at some point. Not baseball. Baseball could theoretically have an infinite game.
Same with football, I guess, and basketball. Theoretically.
Well, football has ties.
Not in college.
Well, not college, true.
That's
college.
True. It's just
likely. It's just much more likely, I guess, than
baseball.
Baseball
feels like it will hear me say that and then tempt fate that way.
It's like the old saying, what's the maximum number of strikeouts you can have in a game?
I guess it's infinite.
It's infinite.
Infinite strikeouts.
Oh, and by the way, how about the Gardner kid, John Means, at Baltimore?
Yeah.
Losing the perfect game on a strikeout.
Yeah, bonkers.
Oh, my God.
I didn't see that until after. I was paying attention
as
it was unfolding.
Well,
people were confused but I didn't see
that because I was getting reports as no hitter. And then I think ESPN or MLB Network, in the seventh inning, they called it a perfect game. He's going for a perfect game. And so I looked, and sure enough, he'd faced the minimum because I went through and like, okay, everybody's got the same number at bats. They're three times through the order, or I guess they're two times through the order at this point.
Right.
And but what happened, in the third inning, he threw a strikeout, but in the dirt.
Yeah.
They called it a wild pitch, but the catch should have had it.
Had that. Absolutely.
It goes the backstop. Guy gets on base. So immediately right there, you cannot throw a perfect game. However, like the next pitch, that guy is caught stealing.
Yes.
So he still,
that's right.
And then they got knocked out, so he still faced the minimum. So as a no-hitter where he faced the minimum and there were no errors and no hit by pitches, no walks, it's the first time that that's resulted in not a perfect game in MLB history.
We have been so close to two perfect games this year. We were talking about this the last time Carlos Rodon was going for his when he hit the guy. Yeah. There hasn't been a no-hitter since 2012.
You mean perfect game?
Perfect game since 2012.
There's only been 23?
Yes, and in 2012, there were three of them.
Yeah, I remember that year.
It was Felix Hernandez,
yeah.
Matt Cain, and then tell me if this name belongs, Philip Humber.
Who?
Philip Humber? Oh, former God. Royals pitcher. He was a Royal for the
year.
He was a White Sox from 11 through 12, and he was a Royal in 2010. So he goes from the Royals to the White Sox and throws a perfect game.
It's unreal.
He almost had two this year.
And he was just right there. Because a perfect game, that encompasses defense as well, yeah. Right? And so it's
and
more than just the pitch.
The umps, you know, not
yeah,
not
exactly. And people were calling on ESPN. They were calling, oh, controversial that it's not a perfect game. It's not controversial. Those are the rules. Everybody, if you're
the dude was standing
baseball,
on first base.
Yeah, it was a controversial call. He got to first base safely, but it's the first time in Major League Baseball history that that's been the reason he didn't have a perfect game.
You could have given me 100,000 chances to try to guess where this show would have gone today.
Right?
And I don't think I would have had just getting kind of weirdly nostalgic about baseball, talking about baseball stats, and then Philip Humpty Dumpty or whatever his name is. Yeah, that's fascinating. Let's take a break on that note. Mick Schaefer, 41 Action News with us here on Almost Entirely Sports.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
This is, of all the hours in the week that I do radio, this is one of them.
Yeah, sure.
And so I kind of look forward to it now. I'm like, oh man, bummer.
Well, listen, you got to go out on a good one.
That's right. My last radio hour ever is Briscoe Show
on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Second segment with Mick Schaefer of 41 Action News here with us on Almost Entirely Sports. We talked about baseball for the first segment, as everyone expected us to. But now, you know, the thing that really is a surprise, really a curveball, is I did want to see what you thought about the NFL draft. It's kind of funny because we're now at the end of this week that has been all about the draft. But we got a handful of interesting choices, really. I think this whole draft class, I think literally every single player that the Chiefs ended up adding has something interesting. What was the most interesting pick for you?
No, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. The most interesting pick, maybe the one I'm most intrigued in, I'm going to just go with the sixth round pick in Trey Smith.
Yeah.
It's been an offensive line offseason, right? Mm-hmm. No team in the history of the NFL has had a fan base know more about its offensive line than the damn Chiefs,
that's
right?
True. Yes.
Everybody's an expert. My wife's asking me, so you think Niang will, you know, slide in that right tackle spot or Rimmers or what? No, I don't know, honey. Long, maybe. I don't know. Stop bugging me. Why do you know this? So I'm going to stick with that theme. And Trey Smith and a guy who has had second day talent, you know, second, third round talent, but slid tremendously because of a medical history. And according to the Chiefs, they're one of the more conservative teams when it comes to red flags like that. But they believe they could I love it. Like, Brett Beach is like, yeah, Mike Dodd, he could fix that. You know, that just little lung blood clotty thing. No big deal. We can fix that right up. You need a Phillips head screwdriver? What do we need here? I got all these wrenches.
Gargle some WD-40. It'll loosen.
Have you tried
right
a neti pot?
Have you tried a neti pot?
So, but I believe them. And if so, and I think that's going to be a very motivated player because he's really good. And he was, big time coming out of high school. And those stars tend to stick with you. I think that could be the end up being not the steal of the draft because there's 200 and some picks, but one of the biggest steals of the entire NFL draft.
The point that you just made about Veach saying that they're typically one of the more conservative places in terms of medicals, I thought was really interesting because there's also a handful of guys where you go, wait, hold on, why don't you guys like him? And I think the answer is probably within the medical somewhere. And also, like, he hadn't had an issue with the blood clots lungs up since 2018.
Since his freshman year,
so
right?
So it kind of pans out.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. Do you have any internal conflicts?
And he played
about
this year. He wasn't an opt-out guy, right? He could have used that as an excuse.
Yeah, would have been a pretty good one. Hi, I'm not sure how my lungs work. I don't think I want this rest for you.
What's your excuse? Blood clots in my lungs. Okay, I thought it was going to be like a nosebleed or something. Yeah, you hopped out, but he didn't. Okay. And he played, and so I was shocked. And so I think that one intrigues me the most. I mean, the second rounders are the easy answers. I think those guys are going to come in and be starters, if not right away, certainly before like the midpoint, I think, of the 2021 season. And we talked about it today on the Zone, how I think if it's a successful draft, if those two second round picks become starters pretty soon, and then you can find another starter out of those next four.
There were two Oklahoma State guys throughout this draft process that I liked a lot. And I just need you to tell me how these guys are going to pan out. We talked about Tevin Jenkins, a metric S-ton, because the Chiefs needed a tackle. All of a sudden, they didn't need a tackle anymore because of the Orlando Brown trade. He was there at 31. The Bears end up getting him. He's going to protect Justin Fields at some point. I think that makes a lot of sense. And then also, as the goalposts moved, I kept thinking, man, Tylan Wallace would be fun. Yeah. Man, Tylan Wallace would be a lot of fun in this offense. Were you holding out hope for either of them, obviously before Orlando Brown, for Jenkins?
I was thinking more about Jenkins because he fit a big need for the Chiefs. And look, there's a wide receiver need as well. Wallace is interesting in that, like, he is not a big separation guy, and I don't think he wants to be because he just loves the contact. He loves to jump over a guy and get a ball. I mean, you throw it up, you're never going to see. He's never going to be wide open, and so maybe that's something that, you know, probably hurt him a little bit, but he is so physical. I mean, his tape, there's this legendary run he had against Iowa State, a catch and then a run. It would have been not this past season, would have been 19, where he's running down the sideline and he just brutally stiff arms two guys in like the ear hole and just plants them into the ground while he's running down the sideline, to where like their momentum, their force wasn't even enough to knock him a step out of bounds. He just keeps running and he brutally stiff arms two guys like Derrick Henry style. It's an amazing run and it's kind of the highlight of his career. And so guy with good hands, and I imagine that maybe the speed and the separation hurt him a little bit. Where did he end up going? I can't remember.
Baltimore,
that's right.
The effing Ravens, dude.
That fits. They drafted Justice Hill out of Oklahoma State a couple years ago, but that fits that kind of black and blue bruising mentality that they have there. He's a physical wide receiver, man.
They got Rashad Bateman at 27, who I love Rashad Bateman. They got Jason Owe with a Chiefs pick at 31.
Two receivers.
They took Ben Cleveland out of Georgia, who I think is going to be good after that. I don't know anything about their next pick, which is Brandon Stevens out of SMU. And then they got Tylan Wallace. The Ravens just draft well. They have a lot of picks every year. They got Dalen Hayes at the end of the fifth. They're not going to be the Chiefs because they don't have Patrick Mahomes, but they did have a good draft.
The USA Today put out their power rankings after the draft of not the drafted picks, but the teams as a whole. Did you see this?
I didn't.
Okay, we talked about it on The Zone today.
I don't listen to The Zone.
I know, who does? I'm sorry to mention other programs on this program.
I appreciate that.
And so here's it. Who do you think has the best team after, as a whole, after the draft that USA Today ranked number one?
I mean,
I think it probably should go Tampa Bay, maybe.
Kansas City, Tampa Bay, Baltimore, or Kansas City, Baltimore, Tampa Bay. I'm guessing that's not the order.
Tampa Bay is number one. Yeah. Everybody gets punch drunk on Super Bowl winners, but that's fine.
That's fine. Okay, the Chiefs got the benefit of that last offseason.
They're doing the whole we return all 22 stars.
Yeah, number two, who do you think it is?
Is it Baltimore?
It's going to be Baltimore.
It's going to be Baltimore.
Baltimore was five.
Oh. God, then I have no idea. Is it Green Bay? That'd be funny.
Green Bay was four.
Tennessee?
No.
Oh, Buffalo. It's Buffalo.
Oh, Buffalo's two. Yeah. Chiefs three.
Ugh.
Chiefs are six.
What?
Guess who's three? I laughed.
Cleveland?
I was guessing Cleveland because everybody's over. They're like, I think like 9 or 10 or something like
that. It's got to be an NFC team.
Somebody have a guess.
It's not New Orleans. Their quarterback is gone. It's not Green Bay. I already said Green Bay. We've already got
San Francisco?
I don't know. Yeah.
You ready? The Chargers.
Oh, believe
it. Yeah, there it is. It's already started. Chargers offseason PR, man. They own. We decided.
Yep.
They own the summer. They should be a baseball team. They dominate every summer.
Boy, Mick, it sure is glad to have you back.
Sorry about that. How hilarious is that?
It's really good.
We don't learn anything.
Never.
We don't learn anything.
I really like their draft. I like their quarterback, and that's still stupid. We got to get you out of here. We'll wrap up the show whenever we come back. That's Mick Schaefer, 41 Action News, and Los Angeles Chargers super fan. I almost called him San Diego. You can say goodbye to my mom one segment early.
Bye, Michelle.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
All right, if you come back tomorrow, the show will be better, I promise.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thanks again to Mick Schaefer, 41 Action News, for joining us. Usually, he'd be with us all the way through the end of this hour, but today, not the case. So, we're back for a little more here of this last hour of the week. There's one thing. Now, obviously, Beards was gone for the middle of the week. He's back today. There's one thing, though, that Rudy has just been absolutely bludgeoning me with this entire, at least these last couple of days.
I don't know if bludgeoning is the right word.
It feels... We have
talked about it for maybe 2 to 3 minutes on two separate days.
Your internal clock is not good, and it's felt like hours.
It's 100% right.
It's absolutely not right.
It's 100%
right. It's felt like hours, even if it's only been 5 or 10 minutes. Certainly not 2 or 3. It definitely hasn't been 2. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. We can air out all the dirty laundry right here.
I don't really have much dirty laundry.
You guys can go back and forth on this if you want. I personally cannot find an angle where I am necessarily incredibly heated about anything having to do with the NBA MVP debate right now, but it's something that both of you, at least on some level, fundamentally care deeply about, because it should probably, will probably be Nikola Jokic's award.
Be my guess.
Beards has NBA takes for everything.
That's
true. Rudy
is
a Nuggets fan. Nick Wright said some things on television, which is his literal job, is to say things on television that people talk about. And it's hurt Rudy's feelings. It's hurt Jamal Murray's feelings.
It really has hurt mine.
And
It definitely hurt Jamal.
I have found Rudy both
by proxy, I feel like it's hurt Rudy's feelings.
I have found Rudy Beards in our office. I found him in the bathroom yesterday crying like he had been bullied in school. And I said, Rudy, listen, you got to stop taking all this bleep so personally. Rudy, you drive. I'm going to push back a little bit. There's one part of this that interests me on some level as a conversation topic, but it's not the thing that you care about. So right now, you can call out Nick Wright. You can, you know,
I mean, I don't really.
You can express your love of Jamal Murray. Whatever you got to do.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything to like necessarily call him like fully out on, like, because I don't. Like, part of this is like I don't have a list of essentially Nick Wright's state was. And it's bounced around where his first statement was he'd be the worst MVP in 35 years. Then he was the worst MVP in 50 years. Then I believe he released a list where
he actually had him ranked out over the last 40 years. And that's the thing that I'm actually interested in. He did say Derrick Rose is at the bottom of that list, but yes.
Which is probably fair. For also not Derrick Rose's fault.
Those players' career, not that individual season, but their careers.
Yeah.
So explain why this was a personal attack on everything that you believe.
So, I mean, and this was more of a joke where I understand, like, hey, his job is TV. He's going to say things on TV. The video he put out then today, that felt like a personal attack because he was in his car. He was wearing a hoodie. This wasn't a TV thing. That felt like a personal attack. It's like, you didn't have to make that video. Was his statement in the video correct? Probably. The statement was simply that people are accusing him of making this a point for ratings and that talking about the Denver Nuggets probably doesn't generate ratings. Probably a correct statement. Probably a little unnecessary, I would say. That's all. Also, and this is something I've just thought about, like, really, really recently, where I don't blame Nick Wright for having this conversation because, like, he has to fill a three or four hour TV show. Like, you have to talk about stuff. The MVP is never about, like, what you've done historically. Like, what you've done today and what you will do in the future. Like,
oh, don't tell that to Kobe fans!
It is solely an award about what you are doing right now. Also, Nikola Jokic is 26. He's probably going to play another decade at a high level. We'll see where he's at a decade from now. Like, he is doing things this year that center we have not seen players do since Oscar Robertson or Wilt Chamberlain. Like, he's doing things that centers have not done. Like, he is having a historic offensive season. He's averaging over 20. Like, I've seen some numbers, just like TJ McBride, who covers the Nuggets, put out some numbers to show the impactful season he is having.
Mm-hmm.
He's averaging over 26 points per game, effective field goal percentage over 60%. Only 5 players in NBA history have ever done that. Nikola Jokic is currently one of them. And he leads that group in assists. Now, Zion is also set to join that group this year as well, so there will be – that number will jump up. So there have been five. Jokic is looking to be the sixth. Zion should also hit that group and be the seventh.
Is he currently in that list?
Yes, he's currently in
that
list.
So he probably will not because he might not play. He might not play.
Exactly,
yeah.
Yes. So those, which also, Zion, believe me, an incredible player. Like, that guy. But, he is having – I think that's one of the things where I think is getting maybe this is the – maybe why Nuggets fans are as mad at Nick Wright, and maybe this is where there's a little bit of cross up where Nick Wright is talking about career and what they've accomplished in their career, and Jokic has an incredibly young career so far. Last year was their the last 2 years they've been a highly ranked team going into the playoffs and had some playoff success, but last year was their first real run where it was like, hey, look at us, mm-hmm. where everybody sees us, where we're on this national stage, where people are noticing us. So this is really, it's really been 1 year of doing that. He's having an incredible season when you look at the fact that, and so I got a little off track there, to point out, but I think that's where people are getting a little maybe mixed up, where I think Nuggets fans are talking about the season he's having. Nick Wright is talking about the career he's had versus the careers that others have had.
And it also was making the case for Chris Paul initially, which
Chris
Paul's on the best team in basketball.
I think it should be Nikola Jokic.
The best player in basketball.
Earlier in the year, I've been anytime it's other people have been brought up, I've essentially just been like, psh, no, it's Nikola Jokic 100%. I'll listen to the Chris Paul argument. And part of this comes down to that combination of, does MVP go to the player who's had the best season versus actually most valuable versus actually who's the best player? And there's a weird little, how do you balance all that?
I mean, I can tell you the answer to that. It's always been best player, best team, except for two or three instances of Westbrook averaging a triple-double on a fifth seed, which is where earlier in the year I was an Embiid supporter because he was on the one or two seed in the East, and Jokic was the fifth seed. And
it was a rough start to the year.
It was, and that's why I didn't have him there. And now Embiid missed all the games. LeBron missed all the games. There's been just Giannis isn't going to win it a third year in a row, even though he's been insane. And it's just whittled everybody down to where it's clearly Jokic. And Andrew Sharp, who used to work at The Ringer, had this – or not The Ringer, Grantland, had this tweet earlier about Nick Wright's list of career MVPs. He said, Jokic has such an airtight MVP case, his critics are forced to build their own Sporkle quizzes.
Which is a very good tweet.
That is pretty good. I like that. And also, you take into account – and maybe this shouldn't matter, but I don't – Jamal Murray gets hurt, and the Nuggets have just done nothing. The Nuggets have the second best record in the NBA since Jamal Murray got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that's because Michael Porter Jr. has taken this massive leap. Kevin O'Connor had a whole thing in the Ringer about his jump, and it's one of those weird. I hate saying Jamal Murray getting hurt might be the best thing for the Nuggets long term, but it'll be interesting to see because it seems like it's brought the best out. Of
hey, Beard, do me a favor and mark that. Rudy's really taken some bleep out of context for me this week, and I'd like you to have that for him.
Sure, that's fair. But what he's done with a team that has, especially in the backcourt, has just been has dealt with so many injuries.
What's their starting backcourt currently? I know it's...
Oh, so Monte Morris might be back tonight, so it might be him, but I also think he's out because also now P.J. Dozier is out, and also Will Barton is out. It's Facu Campazzo. It's been actually pretty...
Facundo Campazzo.
It's been pretty good.
Name again?
Facu Campazzo.
He's been pretty Facu Campazzo good. He's been pretty Facu good, yeah.
He's a little short Argentinian point guard, and he's... pretty Facu good. And then I think Austin Rivers is probably it's Facu,
yeah,
Austin Rivers, and Michael Porter Jr. are your backcourt. So
Chris Paul has made DeAndre Ayton good, so
better nickname.
Checkmate.
Point guard is a better nickname than Joker.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
The Joker every time.
Point guard is a great nickname.
Yeah, it really
I can't
is.
Argue it.
Yeah, it really is.
It's I think that's the thing.
I just hope that you can sleep at night again, Rudy.
Yeah,
that's really what I want for you. I just hope you can sleep at night.
Also, I don't know why I find Jamal Murray's just Nick Wrong LOL tweet so funny, because it's not that clever. But it makes me laugh.
Beards, by your estimation quickly, would Jokic in fact be the worst career player just ahead of Rose among those 40-year MVPs?
Because
Nick Wright had him behind years still to come, but he had him behind
as of now.
Slightly behind Nash, Giannis, AI, Russ.
I'd put him in between Rose and Iverson currently, I'd say.
I'm fine with that.
You move Steve Nash up your list.
I did. Steve Nash is excellent.
To be fair,
that's my MVP.
Somebody has to be the worst MVP. Somebody has to be.
Unfortunately, so, Giannis is going to be, or Jokic is going to be the guy in 20 years we look back and say, LeBron didn't win an MVP this year? That's what's unfortunately going to happen.
Probably.
Again, I just hope that this segment has helped get some weight off of Rudy's shoulders in a way that he can
feel good,
fully rest, enjoy a weekend, and learn to breathe again. We will talk to you again on Monday. 7 o'clock Monday, we'll be back. Thanks to Matt Verderam and Mick Schaefer. We'll talk to you Monday. Bye, Mom.
You are listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.